Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Mary Russell, Chief Justice of the Missouri Supreme Court. Hello, Chief Justice.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. The Chief Justice has been on the podcast before, but for those who hadn't listened to the previous one, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came to be Chief Justice?
I am a native of Hannibal, Missouri. I grew up on a dairy farm, one of five children, went to undergraduate college at Truman State, on to law school at the University of Missouri. First job out of law school was a law clerk and a judge at the Supreme Court. So that was actually my first job in the legal field. Mm. And at that time, when I was graduating from law school, I knew for sure there was one job I did not want to have when I got out into the real world. And that was I never, ever, ever, ever wanted to work in a courtroom.
Oh.
And look where I work today.
No kidding.
I practiced law in my hometown of Hannibal for about a dozen years and had a pretty much a civil practice. And after, as I said, about a dozen years there, I went on to the Court of Appeals and was fortunate enough to be appointed there to serve as a judge. And that court, the Eastern District Court of Appeals, is located in St. Louis. That's where I worked for about 9.5 years before I was even more fortunate to be appointed to the Supreme Court in 2004. I've been there ever since. Yeah. And we rotate who's our Chief Justice. And I joke, and I always say whoever is the Chief Justice serves a 2-year sentence. But of course, it's a term.
Right.
And because I've been there so long now, the rotation has come back to me again. Starting last July, I became Chief Justice again.
All right. Recently, as Chief Justice, you've begun writing a column that offers your perspective as Chief Justice on issues and events of the day. And we publish that in the News Tribune.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's a very, very insightful column. We thank you. A recent column on the legacy of Sandra Day O'Connor really was quite good. And it really struck me on some of the topics you touched on in that. You spoke about how she has a legacy that's both tangible and intangible. Can you share with us what that means to you?
Well, so tangible, you know, she was the very first woman to ever be appointed to the United States Supreme Court. And that was back in 1981. I was in law school at that time. And although we had probably maybe about a third of our law school class was female, we still knew that our opportunities when we graduated were going to be somewhat limited. You know, if you were interviewing for a job with a large law firm, you certainly wouldn't wear a wedding ring or engagement ring. Employers wanted to make sure that if you were going to be hired, you wouldn't get married and you wouldn't have babies because you'd be taking time off work. And that would cost the firm money. And then we also knew that if a particular firm already had a woman on their staff, there was no need to apply because they already had their token woman. They weren't going to be probably hiring anymore. So, you know, we knew we weren't going to be judges. We knew we weren't going to be managing partners, and probably the opportunities in law firms were going to be a little tighter than they obviously are today. So seeing her appointment was like a breath of fresh air. It was like it gave us hope. It gave us some belief that, yes, maybe there's a place for us in this profession. You know, here she is at the top of the legal spectrum as a justice on the United States Supreme Court. So that tangibly made us feel like, yes, there'll be employment. There'll be a place for us in this profession. We belong here too.
Yeah.
Intangible. As I've met her on a few occasions, and I have so much respect for her, her grace, her humility. She's just a wonderful, kind person. I remember the very, very first time I met her, I was standing there shaking in my boots, just admiring her and wanting to get close for a picture, but I couldn't get the words out of my mouth. And she looked at me, the pitiful thing I was, and said, would you like a picture? And I'm like, yes. And she, her response is one that I've tried to emulate in my life. And she said, I'd be honored to be in a picture with you. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of person she was. And I was invited to her funeral. So it was very historic and a huge honor for me to be there. And the way the invitation came was the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, John Roberts, invited a few of the state Chief Justices, state Supreme Court Chief Justices. And I am on the executive board of our State Chief Justices Conference. Okay. And so we were invited. So about a dozen of us went, including two women who had been chief justices back at the time when Justice O'Connor was active on the bench. Mm-hmm. And it was fun talking to them because they would talk about Sandy and give us some really interesting personal stories about mm-hmm. Justice O'Connor. So those are the intangible and the tangible aspects of her life.
Yeah. Well, and it strikes me, the way you speak of it, that you do try to emulate that approach also with young jurists who are emerging. How do you approach them? What words you would say to them to encourage them as they continue their journey?
Yeah. And not only young jurists, but also young attorneys. Mm-hmm. I guess I just take a little bit of I feel a bit being akin to some of the females in our profession because I walked in their shoes once. Mm-hmm. But I certainly try to help anyone that asks me or anyone that I can provide advice to. I'm full of opinions. just ask my family. I have to be careful and only give them out when asked. But I try to provide encouragement and perspective mm-hmm. and maybe plant seeds for them to think about. Sometimes maybe they don't see that they have the skills that they could apply for a higher position. To help them with some confidence. I'm a good letter writer. I write a lot of letters of recommendation. And I like to bring people together. I see, you know, you'd be a good fit for this job. Why don't you consider that? Why don't you consider getting some more education in this area? Why don't you work and try cases in that area? I love to help people. I mean, I think we all do. It mm-hmm. makes us feel good. And people ask if I will write a letter of recommendation for them. I try to respond with, I'd be honored to.
Yeah. Obviously, looking back on your career, you kind of mentioned there's been a transformation as far as the role of women in the court system, to the point that today there is a majority of females on the Supreme Court.
Yes. And that almost makes me emotional. You know, when I started practicing, in many instances, I was the only female in the courtroom. When I was involved in civic activities in my hometown of Hannibal, I would be the only one at the table for the United Way meeting, mm-hmm. for the Hannibal Chamber of Commerce, for the Industrial Council. I would get involved in bar activities, the Missouri Bar on a statewide level, and there'd be a sprinkling of us females. We'd go to legal meetings, and there was certainly no line at the women's restroom. And so to see things evolve today, to where our court, the Supreme Court of Missouri, now has a majority, 4 females and 3 great, wonderful men. Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable that it's happened. I never thought I'd see it during my lifetime.
Right.
It's historic, and it really is one of my proudest moments.
Yeah. And it's not just limited to the Supreme Court bench either. The presence of women throughout the legal profession has increased tremendously.
Yeah, it's just amazing. So statewide, it's probably a third of all attorneys are female now. Mm-hmm. But the leadership, which is a big difference, is predominantly female. Mm-hmm. So for example, the Missouri Bar, which every attorney in Missouri has to be a member of, the president is a female, the vice president mm-hmm. is a female, the president-elect is a female, the past president is a female. Mm-hmm. The executive director, the ex officio member of the board, the treasurer, clerk of our court, all female. And just recently, when I got my bar renewal card, there was a little flyer enclosed with all these people's names on it, including our chief disciplinary counsel, who happens to be a female.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, this is a frameable document. I'm going to frame this.
Yeah, there you go. So let's talk a little bit about this coming year that you're facing. Before we began the interview, she was mentioning she's been working on this document addressed State of the Judiciary that she'll be making here in a few weeks. But let's talk about the issues facing the Supreme Court today. So in one of your columns, you also had mentioned this. In 2023, there were nearly 150 new judges that have been appointed to the court system. And that just seems like a lot, right?
Yes.
Kind of explain what's going on here and what are the challenges and opportunities that exist by this sort of turnover?
Well, so in Missouri, pursuant to our state constitution, all of our state court judges, that includes the associate, the circuit, the court of appeals, the Supreme Court, we all have mandatory retirement upon our 70th birthday. There is a natural turnover every year. We're kind of in a position now where we're in the baby boomers, mm-hmm. That large bubble through the hose is over 65 and reaching close to that retirement age. So we've lost a lot of judges due to their mandatory retirement age. Along the way, we also lose judges for positions they seek outside of the bench. But unfortunately, lose a few to death. We just lost another judge over the weekend in a car accident. Mm. Turnover and change is good and bad. We lose a lot of institutional knowledge, a lot of years of experience on the bench, even on our bench. Mm. 7 judges, 2 retired last fall. And so that was a lot of years of experience. But when you bring on new judges, you bring on new ideas, people that will look at things differently. You bring in a new level of enthusiasm and energy, judges that maybe are even a little more technologically savvy, which is good. I enjoy it. There's a little bit of onboarding, a little bit of orientation, if you will. But I learn from all my colleagues, new, old. It's a wonderful association on our bench. I've always referred to our court as like a family, our second family. Chief Justice Roberts spoke at Standard O'Connor's funeral, and his opening joke was, "Some people say the Supreme Court is like a family. I say it's like a family of in-laws." Huh. So he got a good laugh.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the biggest challenges the court's going to face in the coming year?
We've got a lot of issues that we're struggling with. Some of the things that I'm hearing and seeing when I'm going out on my tour include mental illness, the large percentage of people that come into our, especially our criminal justice system, that have severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. The legislature last year helped in this matter and appropriated some money so that in the 5 largest counties, mental health services could be brought in to the jail so that those people with severe mental illness that were not competent to proceed to trial and just had to languish in the jail, waiting potential inpatient services, which are few and far between, that they could be given treatment in the jail and hopefully restored to competency so that they could go ahead then and face trial. That's been huge. But then we have a significant number of others that aren't severely mentally ill, but just enough that it's their competency is questionable. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get services for those folks. And they eat up the resources of individual counties. And so mental illness is pervasive and affects so many aspects of our society that people don't realize the issues that they bring to our justice system too. Juvenile detention centers. We don't have enough juvenile detention centers. A few years ago, the legislature changed the age of majority to being eligible for be considered a juvenile from 17, 18. And so what's happened now is those 17-year-olds are now being housed with 13, 14-year-olds, mm-hmm. and they're not teaching them good things.
Right.
And so there's some challenges there that need to be worked out. During my 2 years as Chief Justice, I have pledged to visit every circuit in the state.
I did not know that until I saw it in your column. How's that going?
Well, there's 46 of them.
Yeah.
And I have visited 12.
Okay.
Friday, I will go visit St. Charles, which will be number 13. And next week, I've not told them yet, but I'm hoping to go visit Jackson County.
All right.
It's kind of weather dependent here a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's wonderful. I don't tell the media.
Yeah.
I'm not going for press coverage. I'm not running for office.
Right.
I'm going to listen, learn, and thank all the court employees for what they do as our frontline heroes, as the people, the glue that keep our courts together. So I go around courthouse to the clerk's office and to other court staff, shake their hand, look them in the eye, say thank you, ask if people have concerns, things I can take back to Jefferson City, things that we can fix. We've thrown a lot of extra duties on them recently. Yeah. In the last year or so, we've switched our case management system, our software. We've required them to be on the front line when attorneys don't know how to do redaction of information. Amendment 3 that was passed by the voters required them to expunge marijuana convictions.
Right.
Added on all these new duties into their regular daily job. And in the event, I just want them to know that I appreciate them. Our court appreciates them, and they're not invisible to us. And I've been inviting legislators from those particular areas when I'm in their neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. And many of them have shown up and have gone around the courthouse with me, thanking their constituents.
Yeah.
And also getting to see behind the scenes how courts are working and what services, what programs we provide.
Yeah.
And they've all thanked me for inviting them, which obviously our courts are open to the public.
Right.
But maybe who takes the time or thinks about it,
right,
unless you have an invitation. And so it's been very good. I've enjoyed it. As I said, Friday will be number 13. If you can do the math on 46 less 13, you can see I've got 33 more to go.
Yes.
But I will make it. I'm trying to do 2 a month.
Yeah.
and I will be able to make all 46 in the 2-year period.
So what are the things you've heard that really struck you?
The mental health piece, mm-hmm. the issue with the juveniles. One thing that kind of surprised me, it kind of came out of left field, was in one particular court I was in, there was a jury pool waiting to be questioned. We call mm-hmm. that voir dire. So I was thanking them for all showing up and doing their civic duty as prospective jurors. And so I just kind of innocently asked the employee who was in charge of the jurors, what do they make now? And she said, well, they're paid $6 a day and 7 cents a mile. And another clerk along the way said, I think that's an insult. Mm. 7 cents a mile reimbursement. Well, as state employees, we get a whole lot more than that. I want to say maybe 50 cents a mile. But yet the jurors who we expect to come leave their homes, leave their jobs, leave their families, and do this constitutional duty, we don't think more of them that we can't reimburse them more. Now, I know that's an imposition on some counties. In reality, statistics have shown since 2020, civil jury trials in Missouri are down 76%. That's huge. So the number of jurors and the number of cases in which jurors would be called for is way down. I really hope the legislature might take a look and see if this is something that, that could be fixed.
Sure, sure.
And in fact, there's a bill in the session. And Representative Rudy Veit is a sponsor of the bill. Mm-hmm. I think there's a hearing maybe even tomorrow on this. It's just one little part of a bigger bill.
Yeah.
But included is, you know, taking a look at what we should do for juror compensation.
Well, you had mentioned the changes that have been placed upon these local court offices, CaseNet as one example. How do you think that has gone?
CaseNet has been hugely popular. And I don't have the numbers memorized on how many hits we get a day, but I think just about every citizen has heard of CaseNet and knows what it has. We were one of the first states in the country to have this public system in which people can take a look at and have access to court records. And, mm-hmm. and as of July 1, because we have been able to, with our own technology and our own infrastructure, build CaseNet such that every citizen now, any case filed after July 1 can read every pleading in every case, unless it's a case, it's a confidential case, like a juvenile case. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty wide open. Federal system, you have to pay for it. Ours is free.
Yeah.
So it's a big expansion.
Yeah. We mentioned you were preparing for the state of the judiciary. So what are some of the opportunities? Because most of the time, that's where those are laid out, right? The Chief Justice will lay out the opportunities the state has before it. What are some of the opportunities you see for 2024 and beyond?
I also, in my speech, am talking about all the things legislature has done for us as of recent in legislation. Mm-hmm. The recent legislation they passed last session, the Judicial Privacy Act, to protect our private address, cell phone numbers, mm-hmm. our immediate family's private information from being exposed on the internet. So I want to thank them for what they've done as far as past legislation. And I want to tell them about just the state of the judiciary, you know, what's going on in our judiciary today, and then what our challenges are. So the mental health piece, our juvenile system, those are sort of two areas in which I think there's some opportunities for improvement in how we administer justice and how we help people.
Okay. So I'm going to circle back to an idea we discussed earlier in our discussion about Justice O'Connor. So when the time comes, in the distant future, you decide to hang up your robe, all right? What's the legacy that you, Mary Russell, want to leave?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things. I guess simply maybe that I was kind and helpful. Everybody wants to be considered a fair jurist. And I think sometimes maybe those things are taken for granted, but I'd like to think that people thought that I was a good ambassador for the courts, maybe opened the courts more, made the courts more visible, understandable. I love going out to speaking to groups, whether it's a civic club or it's a student classroom, elementary through college. Mm-hmm. I love being able to explain what we do and have people understand how judges make decisions and how we just don't make this stuff up. It's not our personal belief. We are confined to interpret the law as written by the legislature, or the law is written in the Constitution by the people.
Right.
And sometimes we don't even like the result that's reached. Maybe it's a drunk driver that gets to go free, but that's because the officer forgot to get a warrant and violated the individual's Fourth Amendment constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. So what's more important, a constitutional right or the public policy to keep drunks off the highway. So the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed with us and said it's their constitutional rights. So, you know, it's easy to see a big headline, you know, Judge Gary Castor lets drunk go free.
All right.
But when you see what dilemma Judge Castor was in, you understand that probably he was right.
Yeah.
But I did learn on Friday when I spoke at a class in St. Louis at the last period of the day on Friday, before they thought they were going to get a snow day on Monday, not to be there.
Uh-oh.
And the teacher lets the students have cell phones in the classroom.
Yeah.
So let's just say I was probably not a big hit.
Well, and I will say I have experienced a great opportunity. It's been several years ago, we had a coffee with the editor where the Chief Justice was a guest there, and she basically gave us a test. If memory serves me right, we got to sit as judges and had the opportunity to hear the case, and then she would add other factors that could play into the verdict or the ruling. And it was very enlightening. And I was struck at that time how that is such a great way, how proactive Missouri's courts are in trying to make it less overwhelming to understand what's going on with the courts. Because from someone who doesn't have a law degree, it can be unsettling, overwhelming, confusing.
Yeah, it's downright scary.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of that when I was chief the last time back in 2013 to 2015, I went undercover and visited a handful of courts around the state dressed as I was getting ready to go do my Walmart errands for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a Survey Monkey on an iPad with me. It had some staff, and we manned the doors at various courthouses around the state. And we quizzed people as they were leaving, whether they were litigants, witnesses, family, people in orange jumpsuits, whoever, about how their experience was in the courtroom. And I sat out in the hall on the bench with people waiting their turn. And, you know, and you could just feel the tension, the fear, the apprehension, loss of control, did not know what to expect. And it was a good reminder for me because here I sit in a comfy office in Jefferson City, the big computer screen in front of me. You know, I don't see people's faces. I don't hear voices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading off of a screen what took place at the trial court. And sometimes you lose that human aspect of it, which there's a lot of humanity that we don't see. Oh, that was so good for me to remind me what is really going on. And our courts try to be helpful to people. You know, there's so many pro se litigants. That means people that can't afford or don't choose to hire a lawyer that come to the courthouse. And the judge's hands are tied on, they can't try the case for them because that's given them an unfair advantage to the other side.
Right.
But we're trying to work on programs where legal services can provide advice and counsel to those in the civil arena in courthouses around the state. That's just another thing we're trying to do. You know, when we started treatment courts 3 decades ago, that's something that judges had never done before. In treatment courts, you know, trying to help people with addictions to whether alcohol or drugs or some other maybe mental health component as well, too, to help them be restored to their God-given potential as a citizen. Anyway, we just do a lot of extra social work than that was ever done before. But it's necessary and it's needed. And we don't want courts to be mysterious, but we certainly do try to help make the administration of justice easier for people to understand and navigate, although I'm sure there's a lot more we still can and should be doing.
Well, Chief Justice, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.